This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
The Bible, we were talking theology. Do you have a favorite Bible story?
If you think you just heard a Sunday school teacher, think again. That was a question by a CNN reporter last week to Hillary Clinton. We'll be talking about the dismaying prominence of religion in the presidential campaign and more on today's show. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker. I'm your friendly neighborhood atheist, a former minister, too. And co-presidents of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, which produces this weekly show. And the foundation is the nation's largest association of non-believers, atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate.
Our guest today, later in the program, will be an 18-year-old state church separation activist, Matthew LeClaire from Kearney, New Jersey, who made headlines last week for exposing bias in a textbook about American government, written by James Wilson and John DiUlio.
DiUlio, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah,
he was the first czar of President George Bush's
faith-based office.
Faith-based office in the White House. That's right. But before we catch up with this secular young live wire, Matthew LeClaire, let's go straight to this week's Theocracy Alert.
Utah to Arizona officials have known her for a long time, what's going on there, and it's been more convenient to sort of plead ignorance. We don't know. Nobody can claim they don't know what's going on in there. They may not want to act about it, but nobody can say we didn't know anymore. And I think that's significant, because if we don't know and we don't act, we condemn another generation of young girls in a very large community to a life of slavery and sex abuse.
That's reporter Mike Watkiss from Phoenix Channel 3 TV talking, of course, about the recent raid by authorities in Texas of a polygamous compound. Mike Watkiss has been following the abuse of women and children at polygamous cults in Arizona, Utah, and Texas.
416 children, mostly girls, were taken into state custody on suspicion of widespread sexual and physical abuse at this Texas compound that was run by the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. The raid followed a phone call from a girl at the compound who said she was only 16, that her 50-year-old husband had beaten and raped her. We'll have to delve more in depth on a later show about what's going on with polygamy in America.
But now, as we all know from the constant media attention, Pope Benedict XVI, the former Cardinal Ratzinger, who previously headed the Latter-day Inquisition, is here in the United States this week.
The Pope is here! He arrived in America! He arrived in America just minutes ago, hours ago. I hope you had a good trip. The only thing that you always worry about is Americans are so busy. They work so hard. I hope someone had the time to go get him at the airport.
He will be greeted at Andrews Air Force Base by President Bush and the First Lady. Never before has President Bush met a visiting leader at the airport.
The president picked up the Pope at the airport. How bored is our president?
Exactly. For the very first time, President Bush personally met the airplane of a dignitary, if we can call the Pope a dignitary.
In fact, no president has ever picked up a visiting dignitary at Andrews Air Force Base before. Even Associated Press referred to Wednesday's pomp-filled arrival ceremony at the White House. And never before have we seen played together at the White House the U.S. and Holy See anthems, a 21-gun salute, the fife and drum corps, and the president personally seeing the Popemobile off for a parade down Pennsylvania Avenue. That's a lot of alliteratives.
In a rare blend of patriotism and religion, Pope Benedict was welcomed to the White House. President Bush telling the Pope the United States is a nation of prayer.
Most of all, Holy Father, you will find in America people whose hearts are open to your message of hope.
The Pope seemed pleased with the sunny White House welcome.
I come as a friend, a preacher of the gospel, and one with great respect for this vast pluralistic society.
Benedict is only the second pope and the first in 29 years to visit the White House. Dick Giuliano, CNN Washington.
Of course, much of this is paid for compliments of the U.S. taxpayers. Secret Service coordinated the Pope's security in D.C. with city police. The cost for the D.C. visit alone is expected to be about $2.2 million, including the cleanup.
What's really bizarre is the Bushes put on a Bavarian-themed birthday fete for the Pope Wednesday night, which was Ratzinger's 81st birthday, but the guest of honor wasn't there. He was too busy praying with U.S. bishops at the Basilica, and I had to wonder, did they leave an empty place setting for him? It's very strange.
We taxpayers, not all of us who pray, are being treated to the usual religious rantings against women's rights, against gay rights, against abortion and death with dignity, against the separation of church and state, and against atheism, and we are getting stuck with the bill.
In New York, the Archdiocese won't even have to pay for extra security provided by the city or for the use of Yankee Stadium for a mass.
But it's some comfort that the current pope continues to be dogged by Catholic protesters, by gays, by women, and in particular, by victims of pedophilic priests.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We'll be back to dissect the dismaying Faith Forum on CNN TV last week that grilled the Democratic presidential candidates over faith. But we'll go out for a break listening to a verse from a song, the Stay Away Pope Polka. Dan first wrote that years ago to unwelcome the previous pope when he first visited the United States.
I wrote it as a polka, of course, in deference to Pope John Paul's Polish background, but it still works for a German pope. And by the way, I think this was the very first atheist backup choir in history.
How dare you show your face in the great USA, where dictators like you are out of place? We believe in freedom and democracy here, and fairness for the whole human race. Now here you come parading in your pompous royal clatter, pretending that you govern the earth. But a million mouths are hungry while the church is growing fatter. That tells us just how much you are worth. Stay away, don't come back some other day. It's worse than a sin that we have to pay to hear you preach against the American way.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker. I'm here back with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio on Air America.
We're talking in this segment about the indignities to which the Democratic presidential candidates have been inflicted. They have been subjected now for a year to what is virtually a religious test for public office, even though our U.S. Constitution expressly bans such a religious test.
Last Sunday, CNN held its Faith and Politics Compassion Forum at this obscure college called Messiah College in Grantham, Pennsylvania. Hardly a neutral setting.
No, and let's examine now the kinds of questions to which Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were subjected last Sunday. You'd think you were listening to a network run by Pat Robertson, but no. This was the supposedly secular CNN TV, which is once again outfoxing Fox and once more grilling Democratic candidates on their personal piety in the so-called Faith and Politics Compassion Forum.
Let's talk about your faith. And we warned people the questions tonight would be pretty personal. So I want to ask you, you said in an interview last year that you believe in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And you've actually felt the presence of the Holy Spirit on many occasions. Share some of those occasions with us.
She was asking Hillary, is that right?
Yeah, but I mean, how ridiculous. And here's another one.
Quickly, you brought up the Bible. We were talking theology. Do you have a favorite Bible story?
Ever since I was a little girl, a great admirer of Esther. And I used to ask that that be read to me over and over again, because there weren't too many models of women who had the opportunity to make a decision, to take a chance, a risk, that, you know, was, you know, very courageous.
Of course, Esther. Oh, that's my least favorite Bible book. It's, you know, there's only two, I think, named for women. Esther is the one who is purified for, is it 90 days or a year? I can't remember.
The new wife of the queen.
Yeah, she wants to be tried out to become the new wife of the king, and who has deposed Vashti, who is the only biblical feminist who won't parade herself in front of his friends as she was ordered. And then she goes about and brings about the death of how many people? It's tens of thousands.
It's the wedding present. What would you like for a wedding present?
And she says, kill the enemies of my people. And she has all these people slaughtered, men, women, children.
And
it's
then,
a terrible story.
And at the end of the day, he said, was that nice? And she said, can we do it again tomorrow? So they did the same thing again tomorrow. If I was asked that question, I would say my favorite Bible verse is about the person who pisses against the wall, who burns his virgin daughters as a sacrifice to God. Actually, that phrase is in the Bible.
Yeah, there's so much unpleasantness in the Bible. And but let's continue with the torture, Brian, here, with more questions.
Senator, do you believe that God intervenes in history and rewards or punishes people or nations in real time for their behavior?
Okay, what a question.
That was asked of Obama, or
yes.
Do you remember who that was?
And here's the low light of the debate.
Democrats need to get in church, reach out to evangelicals, link faith with the work that we do.
Okay, Democrats need to get to church. Democrats, Republicans, Americans of whatever ilk need to honor freedom of conscience. And who needs a religious right when you've got CNN TV pushing the religious right agenda? And why do Democrats listen to their Republican enemies and pander like this?
Senator, if one of your daughters asked you, and maybe they already have, Daddy, did God really create the world in 6 days? What would you say?
And again, we're not going to get into all the answers, but this is just demeaning.
And how does that affect a person's ability to run the office of the president, whether they believe in a six-day little creation or not?
Here's another question.
Senator, you've spoken about how your former pastor in Chicago, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, was critical in helping bring you to Christianity and is like part of your family. Could you tell us how he helped bring you closer to God?
Again, this is not an appropriate question. This is not journalism. This is not professional. This is an embarrassment. And politicians should not have to genuflect before the media or the public over their personal religious views.
And notice how Mecham just assumed closer to God, that there is a God that you can get closer to, as if we non-believers, we atheists and agnostics aren't even voting. There were a few during that show, a very few moments of rationality on this program. And let's play just a sample of rationality from each of the candidates.
The biggest danger, I think, for those of us with religious faith when we're in the public sphere is a certain self-righteousness, where we start thinking that, well, you know, I've got a direct line to God. That is incompatible with democracy.
Hear, hear. And here's Hillary.
I understand why some people, even religious people, even people of faith, might say, why are you having this forum? And why are you exploring these issues from two people who are vying to be president of the United States? And I think that's a fair question to ask.
Yeah, and I think that people need to send emails to CNN TV and say no more of this. This is demeaning. And in particular, seculars need to point out that we were completely barred from this event. They had a rabbi, they had a Catholic representative, they had a Southern Baptist, they had a Muslim. But they never had anybody representing secularism. There was no atheist, agnostic. There was no question from anybody, just a passing reference to nonbelievers, actually from the Muslim, to even indicate that we exist. And this is making it look like atheists and agnostics have nothing to do with compassion, that religion has this monopoly on virtue and that we're not even part of the debate.
Well, Hillary's question was really good, and it makes you wonder why they even bothered to show up. Do the Republicans have to show up and answer these kind of questions?
Well, of course, McCain didn't, and that's because he's already courting the religious right. And
so he has nothing to prove, basically, to
them. Well, yeah, and it's just this idea that the Democrats have something to prove. They have nothing to prove in this sphere. They should not have to parade their piety. And I think it's time for the Democrats and the Republicans to wake up to the fact that the secular population is growing, that we're nearly as large as the real diehard, hardcore religious right population. We're at 16% and growing. Who is courting our vote?
We're asking these people to pilot our country. If I was getting on an airplane and I saw that the pilots were praying before they were taking off, I'd get right back off that plane. We're electing them to do a secular job for us, not some superstition and voodoo.
And also, I guess that it was a very boring program. 2 hours of this, and maybe that fact that it put the nation to sleep might discourage this so-called secular media from doing this again. But I'm afraid that, you know, cat's out of the bag, and it's time for the public to complain to the media, complain to politicians about this inappropriate religious test for public office.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back to talk with an 18-year-old go-getter who has made headlines in the New York Times and around the country 2 years in a row for exposing religion in public high school.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021.
This is the church. This is the steeple. Open the doors. Get in there, you atheist.
And we're back. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. By the way, happy belated birthday to Clarence Darrow, the attorney for the damned, as he was called, who was born in 1857 on April the 18th. Clarence Darrow, who defended John Scopes in the famous Scopes trial, said, "I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose." And I think Clarence Darrow would be very happy with our next guest's commitment to separation between church and state.
Matthew LeClaire is an 18-year-old high school senior. He's on the phone with us. He's in New Jersey. We've spoken with him in the past about a kind of bizarre situation at Matthew's high school in Kearney, New Jersey, and his protest a year ago of a proselytizing teacher that was covered extensively in the New York Times. Matt spoke at the 30th Annual Freedom From Religion Foundation Convention here in Madison, Wisconsin last October, where he received a Thomas Jefferson Student Activist Scholarship. And last week, we opened up our newspapers, and there he was again, making headlines.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Matt.
Hi, thanks a lot.
Oh, it's really great to talk to you again. You're a real hero to a lot of us.
Well, thanks a lot. I hope to have a good interview today.
When before we talk about this textbook bias that you've uncovered, for listeners who didn't hear the last show that you were on, can you recap what happened at your high school last year?
Well, it's pretty difficult to do in a short period of time, but I'll try. Basically, what happened was my teacher said a lot of statements during class that were really inappropriate, and I go to a public high school, and basically he said a lot of things that were so out of line that I felt I had to do something about it. Just as an example, he told the students that if they reject the Lord's salvation, they belong in hell. He went further and he dismissed the evolutionary theory and the Big Bang theory as non-scientific. He said dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark. I mean, he said a lot of things that really should not have been said during school.
And what was the subject of his class?
This was a U.S. history class.
And he's a public school teacher telling students they're going to hell?
If they reject his idea of faith, yeah.
And so I remember that you had quite a time convincing the school that he was really saying these things.
Yeah, well, actually, that's why I recorded the classes after 2 days of hearing this. On the third day, I decided to start recording for the fear that I wouldn't be believed. And sure enough, when I reported the situation to the principal and we had a meeting in the principal's office with the teacher denied making almost all the comments. And so I was glad that I had recorded those classes.
And that was probably quite a surprise to your teacher, huh?
Yeah. It was quite a surprise. He actually said, for the most part, that he was angry with me. And actually, the last thing that he said was, you got the big fish.
Hmm.
And it was interesting because it was almost like he knew in a sense that he was caught doing something wrong, yet during the whole time he said that he never did it. So it was a little bit confusing.
And what's amazing to me is throughout this whole time, you really didn't have support from students in the class, did you?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, most of the students were angry with me for the fact that I went after and trying to get this something good accomplished for the school. And, you know, again, we actually waited for over a month before we went public with the situation because we thought that the school board would deal with the situation. We let them know what was going on. We gave them a copy of the class recordings, and they ignored us for over a month, which is why the story ended up going public.
And the way they dealt with the situation was by remedying it with no more tape recording of classes.
That's right. That was their first ever action on this issue. Yeah, they banned students from recording in the classroom without permission from the teacher. And it was interesting because I got a lot of harassment from students, even from some teachers, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I received a death threat from a fellow student because of this. And the school seemed really not to care too much. It was kind of unfortunate. But luckily, we were at least able to settle with them later on after this story became huge. And we were able to accomplish a lot for the school.
And I think what I seem to remember is that there was three outside lecturers that you got to choose more or less to bring in.
Well, basically, I didn't really necessarily choose out of a selection. I mean, I called up groups and people that I thought could do assemblies for the students, and basically I ended up with three speakers, Dr. Charles Liu from the Hayden Planetarium, Dr. Kenneth Miller, who's a biology professor at Brown, and also was the lead witness in the trial in Dover, Pennsylvania 2 years ago about intelligent design, and Reverend Barry Lynn, who's executive director of Americans United. So I was glad that, at the very least, I was at least able to provide an education for the students. It's just it was unfortunate that the Board of Education, as well as a lot of my town, was really against fixing this problem. And unfortunately, not only is this teacher still teaching, but I've heard from some students that he's gone back to doing exactly what he did before. But I can't do anything about that. It's now in the it's not the responsibility of the students, and even if I wanted to, I really couldn't do anything about it anymore. So I hope some other student will.
Or the responsibility of the principal, who could always sit in the classroom and monitor it, you know?
Well, I think that would be a good idea, too. But again, there's even a very close connection there. The principal of our school last year as well is very close to my old teacher, Mr. Breskevich, because he actually coached him. So they've known each other for a long time.
So, but I think that it's still, you got a lot of recognition from state church groups. And do I remember that you got offered an internship too?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was able to do a lot with what came out of it. It's just, it was still so disappointing that this story even had to go public in the first place.
Right.
It's just incredible that a Board of Education would ignore something like this.
Yes.
And now you're doing it again. This month, you're in the news again for stirring up some other kind of trouble. Annie, Laura, you have is that New York Times? Or what?
Well, I have an Associated Press story that ran last week. And there's a picture of you holding up a textbook called the American Government Textbook that must have been in one of your advanced placement history classes. Is that right?
Yeah, AP Government.
And we have about 3 minutes or so before we go out for the break. Do you want to talk about how did you realize there was something wrong with this?
Well, the first thing that I came across in this textbook was a statement saying that students cannot pray in public schools. And I have to say, when I saw that, I realized that that's not true. As a matter of fact, students can pray in public school. It's just they can't do it during instructional time, and they all and it also can't be led by a government official such as a principal or a teacher or an authority figure within the school.
Or other students that get a graduation. It can't be student-led and imposed on other kids. But you can pray privately as much as you like.
Exactly. And even to push the point home, they say it multiple times throughout the textbook. And in addition, they felt it necessary to actually have a photograph of students holding hands outside of a high school in Virginia. And the caption reads, "The Supreme Court will not let this happen inside a public school." Hmm. So it's also tied into the separation of church and state discussion in the textbook, which it seems to try and make the separation of church and state sound bad.
Now, before we go any further, you want to talk about who wrote this textbook?
Yeah, sure. The two authors are James Q. Wilson and John J. DiIulio, and they are both fairly well-known conservatives. Matter of fact, DiIulio was the head of George W. Bush's faith-based initiative for a while. So they're both known conservatives, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't write a textbook. The problem is when that bias not only gets into the textbook, but it also becomes factually inaccurate. That's where the problem is.
And who's publishing the textbook?
It's Houghton Mifflin.
So you started reading, you were in a history class last semester or this semester?
I'm actually still in the same class. I was there last semester and this.
And so you started to get uneasy about bias.
Well, not just biased, just factually inaccurate information. And it does the same thing about the global warming section, if we have time to go into that.
Yeah, just about a minute left before
sure.
the break.
You're not tape recording this class, are you?
No. No, there's really no need, because I'm not really blaming necessarily just my school for this, because it's really the fault of the publishing company and the authors about this. But the other main issue in the textbook is about global warming. And basically it says that science is enmeshed in scientific uncertainty about global warming. And it goes even further to say that, quote, "Not all environmental issues are equally deserving of support. Take the case of global warming." So not only is it untrue that science is enmeshed in scientific uncertainty about global warming, because in fact most scientific groups agree, but it's also instructing the students which side they should be on of a controversy. So it kind of does two really bad things there.
Yeah, pretty insidious. So I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. Be right back with our 18-year-old State Church activist guest, Matthew LeClaire.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. It ain't necessarily so.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Geller, and we're talking with a high school senior, Matt LeClaire from Kearney, New Jersey, who has uncovered bias in a textbook on American history, co-authored by John DiIulio, who used to be President Bush's faith-based liaison at the White House.
And Matt, you were telling us that you've already got some action. They've already done some reform of this textbook, haven't they?
Well, in a sense, they have. I mean, they were already planning to come up with a new edition. It was sort of pre-written, in a sense, what they were going to do in the next edition. And there are some things that they removed from the book. But the ideas of students not being allowed to pray in public schools, that is still in the textbook. And the idea that science is enmeshed in scientific uncertainty regarding global warming is still there. So really, it hasn't been corrected. And I always like to think that whoever does something wrong in the first place will do everything they can to try and correct it. But unfortunately, I'm not really sure if Houghton Mifflin really means to actually fix all the errors in the book, or if they just wanted to say that to kind of stop the flow of the press coverage about the story. And
well, there's been a lot of press coverage. I mean, they have egg on their face, don't they?
In a sense, but really, I think they're trying to make it less obvious. But it's understandable in a sense. It's just I hope that they are sincere in their efforts to correct the book. And they did say that they were willing to work with the authors to work and look into these problems. But I unfortunately, with my experience with some authority figures, I've learned that that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Not to say that they won't, but I'm never really sure.
But high school students are not supposed to know more than the textbooks, are they?
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's so strange watching other students in the class when we're told to read these chapters. And the information, such as students cannot pray in public schools, students read this and are told to memorize it so that they can get an A on the test. And I really think that, in a sense, education has gone sort of south in that direction because of the fact that we're being told to memorize the information rather than understand the information.
Yeah, rather, you're not being taught how to think or question. You're just being taught rote stuff.
Exactly, and taught to memorize the information. That way we can get an A. Understandably so. Who doesn't want an A?
And what's ironic, I think, is that before they take that very test, those students pray so that they'll get a good grade on the test, don't they?
Maybe. I don't really know. But it's just the whole idea, especially when this is an AP government class, and it's also conflicting the science curriculum, which makes it even worse.
Now, you were telling us during the break, Matt, that you have won a very notable scholarship.
Oh, yeah. I received the 2008 ACLU Youth Activist Scholarship Award,
and
basically for my actions last year.
And the actions that we talked about earlier where you exposed proselytizing by a teacher.
Yes.
And what does that involve?
You mean the
scholarship?
The scholarship. Well, basically, I just had to write an essay about something that I've done to protect civil liberties, and I felt that this was a pretty good story to write about.
And you're going to get some sort of, is it a plaque?
It's a $5,000 scholarship.
Wow.
And maybe other things, but in any event, I'll be going down to Washington, D.C. from June 8th to June 10th to attend a conference that they're having by the ACLU, and at the same time, I'll actually have to be in D.C. I'm giving a speech, I think, on Saturday, June 7th at the American Humanist Association conference. So
you're going to be busy telling people about your travails as a high school student.
Pretty much, yeah. I thought that when I entered my senior year that really there wouldn't be anything else going on, but unfortunately it seems like there are a lot of problems going on in education, and what's most disappointing is that this particular textbook is one of the most widely used in the country for this class. And what's most incredible to me is the fact that not one individual, whether it's a teacher, a student, a parent, a reviewer, anybody, has ever publicly challenged the errors in this textbook. I'm very surprised that nobody has before.
We were talking to Susan Jacoby a couple of weeks ago, and she's lamenting the kind of dumbing down of America, this kind of anti-science attitude that's permeating, and this might be one example of that.
Yeah, and I think it's been interesting to talk to some radio talk show hosts around here that are considered to be fairly well-known conservatives, and they come up with these statements such as there are thousands of scientists that say that global warming doesn't exist or that global warming stopped in 1998. And it's interesting to hear these because I look up this information. I don't just throw information out the window that somebody tells me. I look it up for myself, and I see if it's true or not. And sure enough, most of these statements are false. But what's so incredible is that a lot of people take these statements and believe them. So I think that it's really important that students, especially students, and adults as well, are taught proper science education, because global warming, I think we can consider as at least a threat that we should be looking into, and despite what the authors of this textbook say, I think that it is deserving of support.
And as is separation of church and state. We've been talking with high school senior Matthew LeClaire of Kearney, New Jersey. Thank you so much for being a watchdog at your high school, Matt.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me on.
It's a real pleasure to talk to someone like you.
Thank you.
Thank you, listeners, for joining Free Thought Radio today. Free Thought Radio originates from the studio of Madison, Wisconsin's Progressive Talk, the Mic 92.1. The Mic 92.1's program director is Brian Tarani, who is our producer and the engineer of our show. And our announcer is Buzz Kemper. If you want to hear these shows online, go to ffrf.org/radio for archives or for podcasting. If you want to talk back to us, leave a message on this telephone answering machine at 608-204-0422. That's 608-204-0422. 800-480-0422.
We appreciate Matt LeClaire joining our show and you for listening. Ask for a complimentary issue of Free Thought Today, the Foundation's newspaper, or more information at ffrf.org. Go to our website to look up Matthew LeClaire's speech to the Foundation, which is there's also an audio. And don't miss Free Thought Radio next week when our irreverent guest will be John Allen Paulus, best known for his book Innumeracy. We'll talk with this non-believer about his new book, Irreligion, A Mathematician Explains Why the Arguments for God Just Don't Add Up. And we'll leave you with a rhyme for the irreverent by lyricist and atheist Dia Parberg, author of Rhymes for the Irreverent, reprinted by ffrf.org.
Small comforts. Before I was born, I seemed to be contented with being non-beable. So after I'm gone, it seems to me my lot should be not less agreeable.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.